everybody, Kendra the Vet Tech here, and today we're going to talk about mental health in veterinary medicine. In the past, mental health has been a bit of a taboo topic or something, you know, we just really are scared to talk about for fear of being judged by others. And fortunately, the climate is changing and we are seeing a shift in that mindset. And so today we're here to talk with us is a psychologist and lead therapist at our program. It's Dr. Colleen McGuire Jackson. So thank you so much, Dr. Jackson, for joining us today. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I really appreciate the invitation to come and speak with you today, Kendra. So a little bit about my background. So I have been in the counseling field. I've been counseling for the last 16 years. I have worked at a college university the whole time. So what brought me here was I really enjoyed working with college students. I liked the university environment in terms of lifelong learning. And very early in my profession, actually when I was a postdoc, I was invited to work at the satellite office in our College of Veterinary Medicine. So that kind of gave me an introduction to working with students who were either pursuing their DVMs or their vet nursing degrees.
And so how long total has this been for you that you've been working with veterinary professionals?
So I started out pretty early. In 2006 is when I was on my postdoc. I started working part-time in that satellite office. Okay. And I worked there for 6 years. And then they actually decided, like you said, there's been more attention toward mental well-being in the veterinary profession. And so they decided, you know what, we want to get a full-time psychologist here.
Oh, and cool.
Yeah. So that was wonderful for the college. And so they ended up employing a psychologist to work here. And she just left last year, actually 2019. So I just came back to the college once this position opened up full time. I returned just last year, right before COVID hit. So I've been working in the college again, this time full time for the last year.
And full time solely with veterinary professionals, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
Great. And what, I'm not sure if you really explained this quite yet, but what led you to solely the veterinary professional side? It sounds like maybe you were just transferred there and this happened, but is this something that you were kind of attracted to work with veterinary professionals?
Most definitely. So certainly at first it was kind of a stroke of luck. This was an opening in a satellite office and I thought, oh yeah, well, I love animals. And certainly all of the, I've had pets my whole life and all of the veterinarians I've worked with and the veterinary nursing staff, I've always loved like the connections that you grow with these professionals treating my pets. And so it was something that I was interested in, and really working with the students that were pursuing these degrees, it was something that was it was calling to me because I could identify with them a lot. You know, people that go into this profession, they are helping, you know, they're yeah. entering a field where they're helping professionals. They have such big hearts, such caring hearts. And unfortunately, what I would see time and time again is that these individuals, they tend to put others' needs above their own needs.
You got us.
They are, exactly, because they are such caring individuals and they're really called to this field. They tend to, at times, really struggle with a lot of stress and kind of neglecting their own well-being because they're putting others above them. And then certainly it was very rewarding to work with these students because they also tended to be very extremely highly motivated. And so they were wonderful clients to work with because, you know, I would give them homework assignments to work on between sessions and they would come back and they actually did those things. So that really helped in terms of seeing people's progress along the way. And so that was really rewarding to be able to see as well. And again, just supporting the profession, you know, supporting individuals that are providing care to animals, I think is a very rewarding and meaningful work.
And I think it's so funny that we're only a couple minutes in and you as a person that's not in veterinary medicine have really hit the nail on the head so many times. You really do understand us and who we are and and that we're really driven people. I think that's so neat that you have such that great understanding of us. and you're willing to help. Is it just students that you're working with, or do you also provide services for the DVMs and technicians that work for the hospital as well?
So primarily I work with students. However, I also work with trainees too. So people that are DVMs that are in their residency or on internship right now. And then I also work with graduate students as well. So we have some individuals who have their DVMs, but they decided, you know, they want to go on to get their PhD or a master's in an area of research.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, good variety there. And what about, so you've worked with veterinary professionals for quite some time now. Have you noticed any specific triggers or specific situations that are a pattern among us as veterinary people that you're seeing?
Definitely, there are themes that come up quite regularly. I would say the most common themes that come up are obviously this is a very rewarding profession, you know, going into the profession, helping animals, being any kind of animal care helper, worker. And at the same time, it's a profession that comes with a huge amount of stress and responsibility as well. And so when those stress levels kind of get to a chronic nature, that can definitely lead to things like burnout or compassion fatigue, you know, experiencing that secondary trauma that can happen when you're working with patients every day and, you know, working in the animal care field, there's a much higher rate of death losses that people experience either through natural causes or also having to make those very difficult end of life decisions and helping clients through that as well. Yeah. And so dealing with euthanasias. So these are things that are extremely common that can at times, if it's ongoing, can also operate alongside of things like depression as well. Or like I said, being a population that is so highly driven, perfectionism is so common in this field. So people that are perfectionistic, they tend to kind of get critical of themselves. You know, they expect the very best of themselves. And when mistakes happen, which they always do to all of us, we're all human.
Yep.
It's really very hard to accept when that happens. And so people can really get down on themselves or beat themselves up a lot. And that can certainly lead to, if that's ongoing, it can lead to things like depression or increased rates of anxiety.
Yeah. And it sounds like some of them are pretty generalized that you might see outside of veterinary medicine, right? So stress, responsibility, burnout, compassion fatigue, you could see those things in other places too, but maybe the unique things that you're seeing here that you might not elsewhere are the death losses and maybe some of the secondary trauma associated to those things. Are there any other veterinary specific or unique things that you notice that maybe you hadn't elsewhere with other patients?
You know, again, I think it comes back to what I was saying earlier. I think that within the veterinary profession, it can be hard for people to seek work-life integration or work. Some people call it work-life balance. Like I'm not able to experience the balance that I want in my life because they are so committed and devoted to the work that they do. And so with that, sometimes people have difficulty drawing boundaries for themselves and really focusing on, you know, I need to make sure that I'm taking good care of myself so that I can be the best that I can be on the job as well.
And I think that's a great point that you brought up too, the work-life integration. I'm not sure that it's always a balance, if I'm being honest. And I think integration is a really nice word to use there because sometimes the scales just really tip one way or the other, and there's not a lot we can do about it, but understanding that and being able to move forward and kind of rebalance things, if you will, I hate to use that term here, but yeah, integration I think is a much better way to approach that.
Yeah, that's how I prefer to look at it because otherwise I do think that I stated the word work-life balance because I think that that is generally what people hear.
Understand at this point. But yeah, I think moving towards integration as the verbiage is much, much better.
Exactly. Because if we put that word balance on there, I think that that can even put an unrealistic expectation on us, you know? And so if we're striving for that goal and we're not achieving it, then that's yet just another way that we are failing to meet our goals or our aspirations. So I really do appreciate the integration part more so.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you're right too. You mentioned before about, well, of course you're right. You're the mental health professional, but I'm agreeing with your, your statement earlier, you know, about some of these things cycling back to depression and anxiety. And I do think that misconception of work-life balance is definitely something that cycles us back and gets us back there with some of this depression and anxiety that we just can't get the balance right when I do believe truly that's not what we're after.
Right.
And what about red flags? So are there certain red flags that we should be looking out for, either for ourselves or our colleagues? So things like indicators with certain behaviors or actions that we might be seeing that maybe they or us might need some help?
Yeah, you know, I think that there are so many things that I could talk about, and I'll certainly talk about a lot of those. But one of the things that I just want to start off with at the foundation is being aware for yourself as well as for others. If you notice a significant change from a person's previous baseline. Okay. So even noticing that within yourself, like if something's feeling off, if something is feeling different, or if you start to notice that, I'm making more mistakes than is normal for me, or I'm not looking forward to going to work anymore. Like that's a significant change for me because this work was so important to me when I started off. Like, why am I dreading getting out of bed in the morning and getting to work? So I think starting there is important to notice, has there been a significant change that has also been a bit ongoing? You know, the other thing is recognizing we can all have bad days from time yeah. to time, right? I mean, that is normal. That is human. Please don't get down on yourself for having a bad day here and there. But it's more so looking at overall a pattern of symptoms or a pattern of behaviors. So some of those things to look out for, both for yourself as well as others, is feeling these ongoing feelings of sadness. Or some people don't experience sadness. Sometimes it reverts over to irritability or experiencing frustration really commonly over small things, for example. Other things like noticing that either yourself, you're not engaging in self-care, or that you're noticing somebody else isn't engaging in self-care. And I'm talking about some pretty basic things too, like that you're not feeling like taking a shower in the morning, or that you're not brushing your teeth every day, or, you know, or that you just notice somebody's coming to work disheveled. So there can be these outward signs. But also another thing could be somebody who is calling off of work more than typical lately as well. Also things like isolating yourself a little bit more and not feeling like you want to be around friends and family, or noticing one of your friends has been declining your offers for getting together or for chatting. Also thinking about the things that used to bring you enjoyment. You know, maybe you had a hobby, or there were certain things that you would do on the weekends that you really looked forward to, and they're just not bringing you the same satisfaction that they used to bring you. Okay. Those would be other symptoms. Increased reliance on alcohol or other substances. You know, if you're looking to things outside of yourself to kind of numb some of the painful feelings you might be having. So for some people, it's alcohol or drugs. For other people, it could be food. It could be things like shopping. So any of those compulsive behaviors that people use when they are trying to numb their emotions, those are things to look out for. And one of the things that I definitely don't want to forget to mention, because it's so important, especially in the veterinary profession, is if you hear anybody starting to make statements that they just don't want to be here anymore, or that it all just doesn't feel worth it to them anymore, that life doesn't feel worth it anymore. People start making statements like this, or if you start feeling that way as well, you know, some people who are experiencing depression start to literally feel like their way out is to just end their life, you know? Okay. And so those are the types of things that we certainly never want to minimize or ignore. You hear somebody talking about those things, asking them about it is so important.
Yeah, that's the big red flag, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's the best way to go about getting help if we feel like we need it, if we're starting to see these red flags, these ongoing patterns. So I'd like to do like a kind of a double point question here, right? So what's the best way to go about it for ourselves if we feel like we need some help personally? Mm-hmm. And then, well, let's do that one first and then we'll talk about our friends after. So what would I do if I felt like I needed some help? Where would I go? Who would I call? What would be a good starting point for me personally if I wanted to go get some help and I recognize that in myself?
Absolutely. So certainly, you know, I'm in the mental health field. So initially the things that come to me are speaking to a professional about these things. But I really want to take a step back from that and also just acknowledge the fact that everyone is different in terms of their comfort level. Okay, so asking yourself, you know, I'm definitely going through a hard time right now. Who do I feel can really step up for me, be there for me, support me? Who do I feel most comfortable starting to talk to about this? Okay. And so that may well be a friend of yours. It might be somebody from your church. It might be a pastor. It might be even a colleague or a mentor, for example. And so I really want to acknowledge that there are certainly professionals out there that can speak with you, can be helpful for you, and that that's a wonderful way to go. But I also recognize that for some people that can feel like too big of a leap for them. Mm-hmm. Some individuals feel, especially if they've never done it before, the first time can be pretty, they can feel vulnerable, you know, talking to a stranger. Right. Yeah. And so if you think to yourself, okay, who might I be able to talk to about this and starting there, you know, that might be helpful for you. And then also maybe that person that you're reaching out to could be somebody to help support getting you connected to a professional as well. Okay. It could kind of be that stepping stone to help support you in finding a professional. And there are a wide range of mental health professionals as well. I happen to be a psychologist, but there are licensed social workers out there. There are licensed mental health clinicians out there, licensed counselors. They can be called different things based on what state you are licensed in. But there's a wide range of helpers out there that can specifically, you know, if you're going through a really difficult time, that can be supportive for you. You know, another option as well is even calling a hotline. You know, there's the crisis text line that can, like sometimes people don't feel like, I don't want to talk to somebody, but I feel comfortable texting with someone. So the crisis text line, they can be reached by texting home to 241-241.
241-241 and text home. Okay. Yeah, that's actually, I'd not heard of that one. And that's a great suggestion in a day and age where texting is so popular.
Exactly. For some individuals, you know, they feel more comfortable opening up over text than they do actually speaking to somebody in person or even speaking to somebody over the phone. Certainly the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is also a resource that can be reached out to, and they can be reached at 800-273-8255. And these two crisis resources, they don't just have to be used when somebody is all the way to the point of feeling suicidal. You know, if there are other crises going on, you're having a panic attack, you really feel like things are falling apart, these are two resources that can still be used. They're both free. That's another thing that's really important, is there's not that barrier of financial resources that are needed. So that would be yet another way to go. But certainly, in response to your question, obviously, I want to provide a lot more detail about when a person is ready to seek professional mental health support. You know, where do I go? How do I do that? How do I initiate that process?
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. If you have
ahead and do that?
Yeah. Well, because the second part of my initial question was, if you had some suggestions, if we are seeing these ongoing patterns in a friend or a colleague, mm-hmm. kind of the easiest way to broach that with them so that it doesn't create sort of a defensive response in them and then everything kind of shuts down and falls apart. That was the only other question I wanted to make sure we get integrated in this portion before we move on.
Okay, well, let me answer that question. in terms of when you're feeling concerned about somebody, I think the best thing to do is certainly to reach out to them, but really think about the context. You know, as you reach out to someone, make sure, number one, you know, you're not going to want to do it in the hallway at work, right?
Right.
Find a place where you're going to have some time that you can have a private conversation with the person. And definitely make sure that you are in a mental space that you're really there to listen to what they have to say. You know, make sure you're going into it not making any assumptions. You know, not making assumptions that, oh, I bet they're going to be defensive about this, or they're not going to tell me what's actually going on for them. Just simply going with an open heart in terms of recognizing I'm concerned about this person that I care about. I want to express that concern to them and offer to help them however I can. And it's true what you're saying. You know, a lot of times, the first time somebody reaches out to someone, that individual might downplay what it is they're experiencing. You know, they might say, oh, no, don't worry about it. I'm fine. Everything is just fine. I'm okay. Or I'm dealing with it. You know, it's okay. Don't worry about me. In situations where it feels like they might be downplaying it like that, you can get a little bit more specific. So after reaching out to them and just saying, hey, how's it been going for you lately? You know, how are you doing? If they're not really giving you a very open response to that, you can also follow up with, you know, I've been thinking about you lately, and I've been just concerned because these are some things that I've noticed.
Okay.
You know, I've noticed that you seem kind of down, or I've even noticed that you're kind of tearful lately, or maybe it's that you've seemed more irritable, or I've noticed you've been calling off of work more often, and I'm just worried about you, and I want you to know that if there's anything that you need, I'm here for you. If you get to the point where you're thinking about reaching out for some help, you know, I want to support you in doing that. Is there any way that I can help in that process?
What about if you're maybe not feeling especially brave as to be that person to approach them? You know, my assumption as a lay person would be that it's okay to tell somebody else, you know, maybe your manager or a lead veterinarian or something of that nature, and say, hey, look, I've been noticing this pattern. I'm really concerned, but I'm just not brave enough to say anything. Mm-hmm. I assume someone saying something is better than keeping it to ourselves. What Absolutely. Are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, if you don't feel like you have that kind of relationship with the person, for example, where you're not feeling that brave to kind of directly going to them and asking, hey, how's it going for you? Yeah, reaching out to a manager, just pointing it out to somebody that you feel like might be in a better position. Maybe it's not a manager. Maybe it's somebody that you know at work that does have a closer relationship
okay.
to this person.
Okay.
Right? Because oftentimes, you know, whomever it is that reaches out and can really provide support or has the best chance to let the person, like, that the person can feel more comfortable sharing what's really going on, it's going to be somebody that they're closer to.
Okay.
And so if they have somebody that they might be closer to at work, or maybe, you know, a friend of theirs, just reaching out to their friend and saying, hey, I've been noticing this person doesn't quite seem like themselves lately. You know, have you noticed that as well? Is there anything that we could be doing to help support that person? Or have you talked with them about it? And so I think that's always a good thing. If you're not feeling comfortable, or if you just don't have the depth of relationship with that person where you feel comfortable, you know, asking them some of these more vulnerable questions. I do think if there isn't a closer person like that, you know, reaching out to a manager or a boss and just saying, I'm noticing these things, I'm a little bit concerned. I'm not sure if anybody has reached out to her to offer support or him to offer support. So I think it's always important not to ignore it.
Yeah. Just maybe choose your person wisely. Think about it a little bit and
Absolutely.
Choose your person wisely.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, so you're going to tell us about some great ways to get connected.
So like I said, there's a range of mental health professionals out there, but the first place, the easiest place to start is first of all, with your employer. You know, check out to see, do they have an employee assistance program, or otherwise known as an EAP program? Sometimes those programs themselves have counselors that work for them that offer mental health counseling for free. Or they might offer a few sessions and then also offer services to refer individuals out into the community where private practitioners are available that are covered by the company's insurance.
Okay.
So that can be a first place to go. You know, where I work, I work at a university. And so, you know, students have free access to me, but I can also serve as a resource to our faculty and staff, too, if they're looking to get connected with somebody in the community for some private sessions. Also looking, I mean, even if you don't work for a university, if there's a university in your town, look to see if they have a psychology clinic, because a lot of universities actually have graduate programs for psychology. And as a result, they have training clinics that can provide these professional services at either a free rate or a very low fee rate. So that's another option. If those are not options that you can access, then you can also speak to your primary care physician as well about some of the things that you're experiencing. And primary care physicians usually have a network of individuals in the community that they tend to refer to for psychological and mental health help as well. Okay. So that's yet another way to go. And then yet another way to go is to, if you have health insurance, then you can reach out to your health insurance company and ask them what mental health providers are located in my community that are covered by my insurance. And they will also have a list of providers to share with you. And then the internet.
Yeah.
It's such a wonderful resource. I can't leave the internet out.
Yeah.
Because you can literally Google mental health providers in and then put your city.
Okay.
Psychology Today is a really great resource. If you Google Psychology Today, they have a database that you can actually search for mental health clinicians specifically in your city and state. And on that database, they will tell you, you know, what is the person's profession? You know, are they a psychologist? Are they a social worker? Are they a licensed mental health clinician? What are their specialty areas as well? Because that's something that you kind of want to keep in mind too. You know, whatever it is that I'm experiencing, maybe I've just had a loss in my life and I'm going through a grieving process right now. Well, then I want to seek out a therapist who has a specific expertise in grief or loss, or maybe I'm going through a divorce. And so those things are listed there as well. And then that site also tells you whether or not they're accepting new patients at the time.
Great. And I think this list is perfect and exactly what we need on here, because I think that when you are at a point sometimes where you're like, ooh, shucks, I need some help real bad. Getting mm-hmm. started is sometimes the hardest part. You don't know where mm-hmm. to go. You don't know what to do. You don't know who to talk to. So mm-hmm. I think this is great. This is a great little list to have in our toolbox here in case we find ourselves or a friend maybe needing some help. So that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that list.
Absolutely.
The last thing I kind of wanted to wrap up with here with you to tap your knowledge here are, what are some things that we can do to keep our own mental health in check?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it's so important. So the first thing that comes to mind is protecting your sleep. So I know that sounds like, well, that's a physical well-being tip. But honestly, sleep is one of the most important things to protect both our physical and mental well-being. When we go for long periods of time where we are depriving ourselves of sleep, our emotions are going to definitely respond in a negative way. So we're going to be more vulnerable to emotional and physical exhaustion. We're going to be more vulnerable towards anxiety and depression. And sleep is just so important because, especially for veterinary professionals, again, people are working so hard and the workload is so high over and over again. I mean, that's one of the themes, you know, going back to you asked me what are the themes. This is a theme, is sleep deprivation. People are constantly robbing themselves of sleep in order to give more. But when we don't have our sleep needs met, we're not thinking as clearly, we're not performing as well, and we're just not feeling as well. It affects so many of our body systems. You know, by not sleeping well, we can gain weight. We can crave sugar throughout the day to kind of keep us going, or we can become overly reliant on caffeine to keep propelling us forward. And then that just leads to more dehydration for us. You know, if we're not hydrating ourselves, then that makes us feel even more fatigued as well. So I think that protecting sleep is like the number one thing that you can do for your mental health. And then just checking in with yourself each day to kind of keep tabs on, how am I doing? How am I feeling today? Am I being kind to myself? You know, what is the internal dialogue that I'm using with myself? If I find myself making a lot of self-disparaging statements or being overly self-critical, really choosing to be more compassionate and more kind to yourselves is so important. And again, I think it goes with being highly driven and perfectionistic individuals. Oftentimes that self-criticism just comes far too naturally.
You're absolutely right. I don't even know what to say back to that, because you just truly do know us so well as a group of people. You've really hit the nail on the head. And take a break, guys. I mean, that's really kind of what I get between the lines here from Dr. Jackson is, you know, just take a break. If you're doing those self-checks and the check engine light is on, take a break. You're going to be better for it in the long run. Was there anything else maybe that I missed, Dr. Jackson, or that you feel is important that you really want to get out there to other veterinary professionals?
I mean, I think just the last thing is just to express my appreciation for all that you all do. Again, our animals are part of our families, truly. You know, I have a fur baby at home. He was my first baby. And I just appreciate the work that you do and the heart that you put in it. And I also hope that you can appreciate yourselves as well and take care of yourselves as you do this challenging work.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. It is a labor of love for us. That's why we all do it. Certainly not for the money, for sure. Yeah. And I usually wrap up the episode with a tip or a trick. And I think you kind of already touched on yours for today. Just the tip and the trick for today from Dr. Jackson was to make sure we're getting sleep and that we're being kind, guys, to ourselves and to others. So that wraps us up for today. Dr. Jackson, thank you so much for joining us. This was so enlightening. Thank you so much for everything that you shared with us.
And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today, guys. You can find me at Kendra the Vet Tech on any of your favorite podcast platforms, at kendrathevettech.com. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Kendra the Vet Tech. If you have questions, concerns, thoughts, other things you'd like to learn about, feel free to email me at kendrathevettech@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.